Now I want to talk to you today about something that everyone is interested in. Everyone is interested in success. I never met anyone yet who said, I'd like to be a failure. Now, a lot of people have one idea of success. A lot of others have another idea of success. But everyone wants to be whatever their idea of success may be. There are several things that are very important if you're going to be a success. First of all, I would say if you're going to be a success, you must be yourself. By that, I mean, don't be a big phony. Be the genuine article. Be the real thing. Not too long ago, there was a very popular book called Games People Play. The idea of the book is that most of us are constantly playing games. We're never really ourselves at all. We're just putting on a show. We're trying to figure out how we think other people want us to act, and that's the way we try to act. So I'm saying, be yourself. Don't be a phony. Be the genuine person that you really are. But when I say this, I'm perfectly aware that a lot of people have used being themselves as an excuse to their own laziness. We played against San Francisco one year, and after the game, I walked through the Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco. And in case you don't know, that's where the hippies hang out. And as I passed through that area, I was amazed because you could actually smell them before you saw them. Their deodorant wore off as the day wore on. Don't misunderstand me. I have great respect for the hippie who is genuinely searching for the meaning to existence. The one that I have no respect for is the hippie or anyone else in any other strata of society who is using being himself as an excuse to his own laziness. He's saying, that's just the way I am. He's doing what comes most naturally. And if you do what comes most naturally, then you'll become an animal. So when I say be yourself, I don't mean do what comes most naturally. I mean be the best self that you were created to be. And how do you do that? Well, that's not so easy. I was talking to Jim Brown after he had gained about 232 yards against New York one year. And for you ladies that are here, 232 yards isn't a bad day. In fact, it isn't a bad year for a lot of backs. And I said, Jim, tell me, how did you do it? 232 yards in one day? This is superhuman. This is fantastic. How did you get yourself so up that you could perform in this wonderful way? He said, well, Bill, he said, all week long, before we played against New York, in my imagination, I saw myself doing my job. I saw myself playing my position. He said, in my imagination, I imagined how it would be if I ran an end run. I could see the quarterback pitching the ball out to me. I could see myself taking out around in. I could see myself cutting in and out of tacklers and around and over and through people. In my imagination, he said, I could see myself ripping up the middle and off tackle. I could see myself catching passes and making blocks. That making blocks is hard to believe. But he said, I could see myself doing my whole job over and over and over again throughout the entire game, and how it would be in the game when the game did come up. And when the game did come up and I did do well, he said, I wasn't surprised. They asked Gene Tooney after he'd knocked out Jack Dempsey with that fantastic left hook of his. They said, how did you do it? That was the most tremendous left hook that we've ever seen, perfectly placed and perfectly timed, a tremendous left hook. How did you do it? He said, oh, that wasn't so surprising to me. I had already done it 10,000 times before. And they looked at him in amazement, and he said, in imagination. Isn't this it? Isn't a large part of athletic success in the imagination of the athlete himself? The premise is this. The premise is that experiences vividly imagined have the same impact on the subconscious as experiences actually experienced. So that if you see yourself in your mind's eye doing your job and doing your job well before the game ever comes up, you're much more likely to do well. If you see yourself in your mind's eye doing your job poorly, then you're much more likely to fail. You see, worry pictures are success pictures in reverse. You vividly imagine yourself failing, and you'll figure out a way to fail, because there is one thing that is certain. You must be true to your self-image. The first time I ever ran into this idea was when I was back in high school. My high school English teacher said something like this. Emerson said, man becomes what he thinks about all day long. And I thought to myself, there's a great deal of truth in that statement. Man does tend to become what he thinks about all day long. But then as a high school boy, I became much more honest, and I said, yes, but if I were what I thought about all day long, I'd be a girl. But I still believe that Emerson was right. Man does become what he thinks about all day long. Man does tend to take the shape of his self-image if he sees himself doing his job and doing his job well over and over and over again. He's much more likely to do the job well when the game actually comes about. But also, I hear too many people these days who are saying foolish things like this. They say, you show me a man that'll work hard, and I'll show you a success. You show me a man that'll say that, and I'll show you an idiot. I know a lot of people that work hard all their lives, and they never quite make it. A lot of others, they don't even seem to halfway try, and they make it quite easily. If hard work were the answer, a lot of people would be successes who aren't, and a lot who are would not. A lot of other people say, if you do well and if you try to do the right thing by your fellow man, everything will turn out all right. That's a bunch of bull, too. Because you know, I know a lot of people that are the most shrewd con artists that you've ever seen. And they do wonderfully well, at least financially. And a lot of other very fine, dedicated, wonderful people who never quite make it at all, at least not financially. The problem is that a lot of the wrong people are using the right principles to accomplish the wrong ends. What I would like to see is some of the right people begin to use some of the right principles to accomplish the right ends. That's why I'm so impressed when I see the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and so many of you here that have the capability and are becoming some of the great athletes of our country. And I've had the privilege of associating with some of the finest young men in this country recently. And I would like to see you young men begin to discipline yourself psychologically to see yourself in your mind's eye doing your job and doing your job well so that you can be a success. Because there are certain principles which, if you follow psychologically, will help you to succeed a great deal quicker. Because you must be true to the way you see yourself doing your job in your mind's eye. But also, I would say if you're going to be a success, you must believe in yourself. A low opinion of yourself is not a good thing, it's a bad thing. It's not a virtue, it's a vice. Too often times, people have had a fouled up idea of what humility is. They think that humility is degrading themselves, and so they go around telling everybody how bad they are. But this isn't humility at all. Every time you say you can't or think you can't, you're actually preconditioning yourself to failure before you ever start. I know a lot of guys, you say to them, you know, you played a good game today. And he says, oh, no, I didn't play so good. You say to a girl, you look real nice today. And she says, oh, no, my hair's all messed up. I don't really look very nice. And these people think that this is humility. This is not humility at all. This is degrading yourself and therefore lessening your possibility of succeeding. For every time you say you can't, then you actually carry a parachute with you into what you're doing, and that's horrible. I know a lot of athletes, before they go into the game, well, they say, I don't know whether I'll do very well in this game or not, but I'll try it anyway. Problem is, this carries over into later life, and you say, I don't know whether this business venture will work out or not, but I'll try it anyway. Or what's worse, I don't know whether this marriage will work out or not, but I'll try it anyway. And then you get into the business venture, or you get into the marriage, and things don't work out right away, just as they never do. And you say, just as I thought, and you already have your parachute on, and so you bail out. I feel sort of like Lincoln did concerning marriage. He said it's hard enough to get used to one woman in a lifetime, much less two. So you'd be much better off, whether it's a marriage or a business venture of the future, or an athletic game or a classroom of the present, to throw away your parachute and dive in with both feet and both hands and believe that you can. What we too often tend to do is just put one foot in what we're doing right now, and with the other foot we feel around on the outside to see if we can find some firmer footing somewhere else. We need to abandon ourselves to what we're doing right now, placing both feet and both hands in what we're doing right now, and we'll be much more likely to succeed. But I can hear someone back there saying, Bill, you just don't know me. I'm just sort of a born dud. I just don't have it. Even Einstein, one of the most intelligent men that ever lived, only used about 10% of his brain capacity, and I'm convinced that most of us are only scratching the surface of what we really could do if we believed we could. Isn't this best seen in track? Did you realize that up to about 12 years ago, no one had ever run better than a 4-minute mile? And men had been trying to break the 4-minute mile down through track recorded history, and no one had ever done it. In fact, there were articles written by great authorities saying no one will ever run better than a 4-minute mile, and no one did until Bannister one day came along and forgot that he wasn't supposed to run better than a 4-minute mile, and he did it. And it astounded the whole athletic world. And headlines all over the world were, Bannister breaks the 4-minute mile. Now, how many people would you say in the last 12 years have broken the 4-minute mile? Would you say 10, 20, 50, 100? Even if you said 200, you'd be wrong. Well, over 250 people have broken the 4-minute mile. I noticed the other day in the paper where 4 men in one race broke the 4-minute mile. Why is that? Is that because all of we modern-day athletes are so much better than all you old codgers? I don't think so. I think that it is because there was a barrier above which no man could ever go, and no one did until someone did, and then everyone could. We tend to place these barriers in every field of endeavor, and we always reverence those barriers, and no one will break them until someone does, and then everyone is free to do it. And much of the reason that we don't do better in what we do is because we don't believe we can. And when we don't believe we can, what we're really saying is, God, you sure did a sorry job when you made me. And nothing could be further from the truth. He did a fantastic job when he made you. Physically, mentally, spiritually, he created an amazing individual when he made you. The problem is that we don't do better than we do because we don't believe we can. We sabotage our own efforts. Nobody is ever really a success until he understands the importance of persons. Several years ago, I read two very fascinating books. One was called The Last Days, and the other was called The Last 100 Days, and both of these books discussed Hitler's last days of power in Germany. Enemy troops are coming in on every side of Berlin. All that was left of Hitler's great domain was just a little bit bigger than the size of the city of Berlin. And Hitler was hiding 40 feet beneath the surface, perhaps prematurely, in his bunker. The walls were of concrete and steel, 6 feet thick, and he was 40 feet down. And one of his leading generals was descending the bunker steps, and his adjutant was beside him as they walked down the steps. And the general said to his adjutant, "Isn't it amazing that just 2 years ago, Hitler ruled all of Europe. And today he's hiding in a hole like a dog. And I thought to myself as I read those lines, no, it really isn't all that amazing. Because anytime anyone ever uses other people like things, as Hitler has, he'll find himself in a hole with his world crumbling about his ears. Because people are more important than things. And they refuse to be used as things every time. And I don't care whether that tyrant is in a nation or in a home. Whether he's in a school or in a ball club. I don't care where that tyrant is who tries to use other people like things. He'll ultimately find that the world will rise up and hate him for it, and ultimately crush him for it. Because people are more important than things. And they refuse to be used as things every time. And I don't think there's any greater need that we have in our country, in our world today, than to be understanding of others. We need to somehow empathize, and for you linemen, that means something like sympathize. It means to feel with the other man. To be able to put yourself in his shoes and look at things from his viewpoint. And as you look at things from his viewpoint, you can therefore better understand him. There would be nothing better for race relations or for labor management relations or for student-teacher relations or for all forms of human relations than that we be able to empathize, to feel with the other person, to put ourselves in his shoes. Be understanding of others. Realize that they have fantastic innate worth within themselves and must be respected as such. They are creatures created in the image of God. I've been sort of stalling here because I wanted to say something to you. That you all look so nice and sweet and fresh and clean and pure that I hesitate to say anything to you about it. In fact, I'm going to discipline myself not to say anything to you about it. But if I had have said something to you about it, here's what I'd have said. We got a new dummy on our team. I mean, one of the blocking variety, not of the college variety, and it had 14 different blocking surfaces on it. It was a beautiful multicolored thing, and the coaches were very proud of it because they themselves designed it. We, the players, we didn't like the dummy because we thought the dummy was set at bad angles, and so we refused to use it. For several days, it went totally unused. Sitting over in one corner of the field like a gigantic monstrosity. The coaches were embarrassed because the players didn't like the dummy, the owners thought it cost too much, and the only people that really liked the dummy coach were the coaches themselves. So after workout one day, I decided that I would go over and hit the dummy and give the dummy a second chance. Maybe it was better than I first thought, and I didn't think that anyone else was even on the field as I began to hit the dummy. I hit it 4 or 5 times, and sure enough, I decided I liked that dummy pretty well, so I really started unloading on the dummy. And Blanton Collier, our head coach, saw me from all the way across the field, and he was so thrilled because he thought to himself, finally someone likes my dummy. And he almost ran across the field where I was hitting the dummy. And when he got over there, he just couldn't contain himself. He just had to ask the question. He said, Bill, tell me, how do you like the dummy? He's my coach. And I wanted to tell him what he wanted to hear. And so I said, Coach, I just love the dummy. Then I got to thinking about it. Do you really love the dummy? I mean, you know, it's all right to say you like to get your football workout on the dummy, but if you're going to be completely honest, you wouldn't say you love the dummy. You might say you want to gain experience, or you might say you want to flex your football muscles. You might say you want to impress them, but you don't or shouldn't say you love it. And yet I know a lot of guys who say to girls, I love you. I sometimes feel like saying it could be that you ought to be a great deal more honest and say, I love me and I want to use you like a football dummy. I want to gain experience at your expense, ad infinitum, ad infabul. Let me remind you, young man, that your whole world is so made up by its creator that nobody, but nobody, ever really gets away with using a person like a thing. Oh, he thinks he does. In fact, he may think himself an awfully big man. But ultimately, if he uses a person like a thing, he catches it right in the teeth. The scripture says, sow to the wind and reap the whirlwind. Because every human being is a creature created in the image of God and must be respected as such. The new morality doesn't work. God isn't trying to be arbitrary. He's just saying it doesn't work. You may not believe that. Nevertheless, it is true. And if you don't adhere to it, you'll catch it right in the teeth. Because people are more important than things. They are creatures created in the image of God and must be respected as such. But also, be going somewhere. You never really can be a success unless you're going somewhere. There's a lot of reasons you ought to be going somewhere. It is only as you're going somewhere that you can be psychologically well balanced. Did you ever notice how tough it is to keep balance on a bicycle that's standing still? It's well nigh impossible. But not half so tough as it is to keep balance in the life that's standing still. I once heard a teenage boy say, life just isn't worth living. And I thought to myself, young man, you're exactly right, unless you've got something to live for. And then life is infinitely worth living. A lot of old men strive hard all of their lives, striving for the goal of retirement. Retirement, 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 that's all they ever think about. Retirement is their total world. And then they retire and they're miserable. The problem is that they don't understand, even in their maturing years, that both when they're young and old, they are still basically goal strivers, and they'll only be satisfied when they're striving for a worthwhile goal. In football, it's the goal line. In baseball, it's home plate. In track, it's the finish line. In every game, there is a goal. And if a game doesn't have a goal, it's no game at all. It's chaos. And if a life doesn't have a goal, it's no life at all. It's chaos. Some men and young men that I know are nothing more or less than muscular mountains of indirection, going in circles trying to score. Nobody can ever score unless they have a goal and see it clearly and go for it with every gut that's in them. Be going somewhere and you'll be well balanced in your life. 1 in every 10 people in the United States today are mentally ill. And I'm convinced the reason there's so much mental illness is because there's so little lack of direction. But also be going somewhere, because it is only as you're going somewhere that you can be motivated. I'm not going to talk to you a great deal about motivation today, because you've heard that a lot, I know, but I will tell you about my little boy. Well, really, he's not too little. He's 12 years old now and weighs 180 pounds. But I remember when he was in the second grade and he came into my room on a Monday morning and he wanted to say to me when he came into the room, look, Dad, I don't want to go to school today. But he's much too much of a diplomat for that. And so he came into my room and he said, Dad, you know what? I said, what's that, son? He said, my foot sure does hurt. I said, no kidding. Yes, sir. Also, he said, Dad, he said, I have a horrible stomach ache. I said, no kidding. That's right. Also, he said, Dad, he said, my head hurts so bad, I don't even know whether I can go to school today or not. I said, really? He said, yes, sir. Well, I knew he was just bluffing. I knew he wasn't really sick. But I didn't know how to encourage him to go into school anyway. In fact, I found that I've been a much worse parent since I've been one. I mean, when I was your age and even older, you know, I had all the answers already figured out, and most of them were, yes. But since I've been a parent, I've found that it isn't quite so easy after all. In fact, I find myself constantly resorting to the pragmatic. That means what works, or at least it seems to work at the time. So with all due apology to all of you budding young child psychologists, you know the definition of a child psychologist, that's someone who's never had a child. Here's what I said, and I know it's horrible. I said, I got a doctor friend who lives down the street here about 6 blocks away. And he's got a perfect cure for all your problems. Really, Dad? Yes. Well, how does he do it, Dad? I said, he's got a shot. And the shot has got a needle on it. The needle's about like that. And when this doctor wants to cure a headache, he goes in right here. For stomach aches, he goes in at the navel. For foot aches, underneath the big toenail. And it'll cure all your problems right away. No kidding. That's right. About 5 minutes later, our son's sneaking out the back door. I said, where are you going? Boy, going to school, Dad. You're going to be late. What about headache? Much better, Dad. What about your stomach ache? Had breakfast, Dad. And I could tell that his foot wasn't hurting him because he was running like the wind towards school. Now, that same week, on a Saturday morning, we were going fishing. My little boy loves to fish. The alarm clock went off at 4 o'clock in the morning. And that kid didn't jump out of bed. He catapulted out of bed. And he came running to my room and he grabs me by the ankle and he begins to jerk on my ankle. Come on, he said, Dad, let's go, Dad. Those fish waiting on us, Dad. And as I looked up off the floor and blinked my eyes, I said to myself, is this the same human being that was my little boy on Monday morning? The very same. Well, what is this fantastic difference? On Monday morning, he's a pure deadbeat. On Saturday morning, he's like a wild maniac. Just one thing. That kid is really motivated. When you motivate a kid, there's nothing he can't do. But when he's not motivated, there's very little he can do. And I can tell whether or not you're motivated by the way you sit in your chair. That's right, don't straighten up. I can tell by the way you walk and talk. I can tell by the animation of your personality whether or not you're really motivated. When a man is motivated, it's obvious. And when he's not motivated, it's also obvious. And I don't ever see any lazy students, lazy athletes, or lazy teachers, but I do see an awful lot of unmotivated athletes and unmotivated students and unmotivated, well, I won't say that last one, but you know what I mean. When you motivate an athlete and you motivate a student and you motivate a teacher, there's nothing they can do. But when they're not motivated, there's very little they can do. When a man is motivated, he can see his goal and he's going for it with everything that's in him. And nothing can stop him from attaining his goal. But the only way I know that he can be motivated is to see that goal clearly and go for it with everything that's in him. But also I say be going somewhere, because it is only as you're going somewhere that you can make any sense out of your universe. You know, our universe is so big that it's almost beyond belief. Did you realize that they recently discovered a star that is so big that the diameter of that star is 3 times greater than the distance between here and our sun? That's 92 million miles. In simple Texas language, that's an awful big star. And there are probably more stars out there than there are grains of sand in the world, and they're floating through space at astronomical speed and perfect precision. Then you can set your watch to the second with where a distant star is going to be 100 years from now and where it was 100 years ago. If you were walking through the woods one day and as you walked you saw on the pathway a watch, would you pick the watch up and say, ah, an accidental watch. Amazing. But you would be infinitely more intelligent to say that than you would to look at your universe and say, an accidental universe. You see, it seems to me that when you see your universe, you've got to say that that universe or anything in it was created in one of 4 ways. You've got to say that universe or anything in it was created by man, machine, accident, our God. Now when I look at my universe, I know that it wasn't made by man nor machine, leastwise not any man or machine I've ever seen. The only two alternatives are that it was made by accident or God. Would you like to explore the possibilities that it was made by accident? One scientist said, I know how it all came into being. several hundred billion years ago, there was a collision of heavenly bodies. That collision produced fragments. Those fragments, over a gradual evolutionary process, have become our solar system. And here we all are. And just because some great scientist said it, we all nod our heads in unison. And as we nod, you can hear the rocks roll around. I have great respect for the scientist, unless he wants to run 100 miles out of bounds and come to the asinine conclusion that the universe is an accident. If there was a collision of two cars out here in front of this building today, would you expect that the result of that collision of two automobiles would produce a bunch of little automobiles? I wouldn't. Neither would I expect that the collision of heavenly bodies would produce a solar system. Another scientist said, I know how it all came into being. There was a big explosion. The explosion produced fragments. Those fragments became our solar system. If there was an explosion down here at the city newspaper, would you expect that the result would be that all the news type would fly up in the air and come back down again in a perfect, unabridged dictionary? I wouldn't. But I would much sooner expect that than that the universe is an accident. Because you see, explosions produce chaos and not order. Collisions produce chaos and not order. Where there is design, there is a designer. Where there is a building, there is a builder. Where there is a universe, there is a creator. And if there's not, then I can't make any sense out of it. Did you ever see those two skydivers that dive out of that airplane on television? They fall simultaneously. And as they're falling, did you ever wonder what they were discussing? They're only about that far apart. They're falling through the air. Wouldn't it be funny if one of those skydivers said to the other skydiver, you know what? What's that? You forgot something. What did I forget? Your parachute. You know what? What's that? In just a minute, you're going to be a greasy spot. Ah, but the first protest. The view is so beautiful from up here. And it's nice and quiet and breezy and peaceful. But he's in for a sudden jolt. A man without God is about as intelligent as a skydiver without a parachute. He just forgot the most important thing. So I said, be yourself and be your best self. Believe in yourself and have the guts to bet on yourself. Be understanding of other people and realize that they have fantastic innate worth within themselves and must be respected as such because they are creatures created in the image of God. And I said, be going somewhere, because it is only as you're going somewhere that you can be well balanced, that you can be motivated, and that you can make some sense out of your universe. And if you do, and if you will, it'll be a great day and a great game, and you'll win every time.
Now, to summarize, remember these important facts. Number one, getting up for the game is not a temporary emotional binge that you go on immediately before game time. It is a whole way of life, a whole new way of thinking, which throws out negative pictures from your mind by replacing them with positive pictures of success. Number two, set aside a time daily when you program your mind by picturing the things you want to accomplish in the game. Number three, set a goal and go for it with every gut that's in you. You should also set some intermediate goals toward which you will work before attaining your ultimate goal. Number four, never forget you will play exactly as you see yourself playing in your mind. If you burn the image of the athlete you want to become in your mind long enough and vividly enough, you will discover that you will become, over a period of time, what you see yourself as being in your imagination. Number five, listen to this record as often as possible, and especially listen to side number one before games.